I'm Maisie Cohen, and welcome to Rhyming the Dead, a Red Room Company radio series produced with the assistance of the Community Radio Network. Over 5 episodes, we'll hear new works from 10 poets around the country, who are asked to reflect on a dead poet of their choice, and how that person's life and death has profoundly influenced their writing. In today's episode, our poets Judith Rodriguez and Renee Petit-Shipp each respond to female poets of the 20th century who felt an extremely powerful connection to the land, a link that led them to become lifelong friends.
We share so much in common with each other. We're poets. We fight the mining companies because of the terrible battering they give to the country. We fight for a better way of life, for the heritage that all Australians are entitled to in Australia. And I think this is what binds us very, very closely together.
Renee Petit-Shipp responds to Judith Wright, who is regarded by many as a luminary of Australian poetry. She wrote extensively on the relationship between the individual and nature, a bond she saw imbued with great responsibility.
Shine there, I shined, but still uneasily. I sold the Coachwood Forest in my name. Both had been given me, but all the same, remember that I shined uneasily.
And Judith Rodriguez invokes Udru Nunakul, also known as Kath Walker, a passionate writer and activist who lived much of her life on Stradbroke Island in Queensland.
There was this fear that this woman might have a message that might be taken notice of. Then the story went out, well, the reason why she writes such good poetry is because she's not a full blood, you know, she's got white blood in her.
West Australian poet Renee Petit-Shipp.
The first time that I came across Judith Wright was as a teenager. So it was kind of this stop-start falling in love, I think is how I would describe it. I think one of the things I really enjoyed is I didn't realise how environmentally active she was. I fell in love with her poetry first. She not only was active in terms of social justice and environmental issues, but she actually founded the Wildlife Preservation Society of Queensland at a time when environmental issues weren't widely discussed. We didn't have the word sustainability bounced around as often as we do now. And then with Nugget Coombs, she formed the Aboriginal Treaty Committee advocating for land rights. So she wasn't someone who joined groups and supported them. She began them. Tiger on the beach. We round the point. Run into the plate glass shock of your presence. Who designed the monstrous fact of you? Who engineered the slipstream sinews, the meeting of muscles that steals your formidable form? Sea tiger, kua, shark chief, na umakua, why are you lying so still on the shore? We find you fin first, discover you from the architecture, the angle of your tilted tail. Even your stench is impressive, finger over nostril, hand over mouth. I pace your presence from end to end. How can it be that your plain potency cannot flick the fly, the crab? Your skin has begun to wrinkle, echoes the pattern on the ocean floor, becomes fingertips of children at bath time. But on your lonely shore, sea abandoned, the tide is out. I slide one forefinger slowly over your flesh, my muscles tensed and irrational, the terrain of your skin a sea of serrations, resisting my touch all the way. Your prized jaws closed like a finished sentence, your trophy teeth hidden, lending you an alien softness. Wide-eyed, full-faced, open. And your one quiet eye, amber and turned to the sun. What did it last see? What kind of parting gift did the light leave? Then there it is above the eye, the mark that makes me see. Skin cold, I read where the blade drove in and in and in. Forgive us, wild and terrible friend. We have sinned. Tiger on the Beach might seem like a bit of a surprising poem to have in response to Judith Wright, because as you read through her work, she seems a very terrestrial poet. She's often writing about her connection with the land and not often about the ocean, although of course there are exceptions like Rockpool. But this poem was actually a direct response to the poem Platypus, which really is definitely one of my favourite poems by Judith Wright. And I came across it in a Poetica podcast, and I used to listen to the podcast going on my walks along the reef, and I just was so struck by the power in its simplicity. It's so pared back, but so strong. I'd been thinking to myself, how can I write a poem about a creature on the Cocos-Keeling Islands in this way? And I hadn't really come to a conclusion, but just was holding that in the back of my mind. And then by chance, my partner and I, we went to go camping in one of the other islands, and we went over in our dinghy and it sunk and all our camping stuff washed away. So the next day we were walking along the lagoon, along the shore, trying to find our tent. And we came round a point and came across this 11-foot tiger shark. And it was such a shock and such an incredible privilege to be able to see this creature so close up, to be able to see how beautifully designed it was. There wasn't an inch of wasted space. It was so engineered. It just embodied power and strength and might. Shoot. I will not close. I will not let so much as one petal curl, as long as this light can reach me. So long as the clear rain falls, still I soak up the song of the world. What does it mean to own each day of desolation? It means letting the soft words of 100 birds fly into you, arrows finding flesh, still letting the one sun make you, and in these times of burning, find your fire. It means letting the new leaves of each other find an opening in you, though your ribs sing in the wind and your heart clangs without its cage, bright red like any target. Though at times you are thin and waning, pushing through each new day's gravity, hold, wait, expand. Put out your best blooms, send your colours into the darkness. Do not pull back your life's raw nerve. I think for me, out of all the poems that I wrote for this series, that Shoot feels like the most important one, because it's very much, I mean, I wouldn't like to say I was responding to all of Judith Wright's work, because she was so prolific. I think she wrote something like 24 books of prose and poetry, but it was a deep engagement with a broad spectrum of her poetry. And just experiencing over and over again her love and connection with the natural world, and then trying not to pull back as you witness her heartbreak at seeing that world destroyed around her. And this is a really important question for me as a poet, and I found it incredible to see echoes of what I struggle with in her work. And it raises a really important question for me, and I think for other artists and other people, of how do we bear witness to what is happening around us? How do we pay attention to what is actually happening in the world and to the world, and remain happy and hopeful people? And I don't think this is an easy question to answer, but my feeling at coming to the end of this project, that Judith Wright's answer would be a commitment to love. And love is just this word that comes up and up and up through her work. That word just, you know, it'd be interesting to know a statistic about how many times the word love appears in her poems. And for me, holding that love despite the acts of hate and destruction that we witness every day is the only way in which we can remain hopeful and enter into something greater and more positive. And it made me think of this really beautiful quote, beautiful analogy by Kahil Gibran, where he talks about sorrow carving out a vessel in us that helps us to contain joy. And that rings true for me, that when you don't shy away from deep sorrow and grief and you own that and work through it, you come out the other end being able to hold so much joy and so much more love and hope. So that was something really inspiring that I came away with from just sitting with Judith Wright and her work through this project.
Having known war and peace and loss and finding, I drink my coffee and wait for the sun to rise. With kitchen swept, cat fed, the day still quiet, I taste my 50 years here in the cup. Outside, the green birds come for bread and water. Their wings wait for the sun to show their colours. I'll show my colours too.
Judith Wright talks candidly about the fact that poetry is a tool for us to understand our lives and for the poet to understand their own life. When I came across Rockpool, I had just lost my father and then about 6 weeks later lost my brother-in-law unexpectedly. And reading that poem, even though she was talking about coming to terms with her own death, helped me to work through the process of understanding death as being part of life and something that you just had to come to terms with. Poetry holds a lot of power in working through those difficult concepts. Song for Silence. Silence is the rock where I shall stand. Oh, when I strike it with my hand, may the artesian waters spring from that source I long to find. All year I have waited for silence, like a farmer waits for rain, angling my ear like he would his eye. All year I have waited for darkness to reach me once again, wrap its deep arms around me, call it rest. And as night pulls down its blind of stars, the bold orb cuts clear above me, round mouth, a cold gasp, held. These days I do not wait for invitations, but the yes in my body pulls me to a place, the precise shape of sleep. Standing now on the moon's surprised surface, amidst an enormous nothing, space beyond horizon, winking humorous stars. Here I push my feet into a cold I've never known, on a surface spurned by sun. Monochrome, I raise my arms in two impossible absence, and my ears sing the hush. I am a new shoot in this world of ancients. I inhabit the status of ants. While all around this orchestra of everything, haze and halo where even light has aged. And where for a moment the indifference of rock becomes a brilliant home, until I lose all anonymity back behind walls steeped in sun, contained by familiar gravity.
That was Renee Petit Shipp reading her poem Song for Silence. And you're listening to Rhyming the Dead. Our second poet, Judith Rodriguez, grew up in Brisbane, where she met Indigenous poet Kath Walker in the 50s. Kath, also known as Oojuru Noonuckle, lived for many years on Stradbroke Island at a place called Moongalba.
Moongalba is a type we're trying to set up here, an alternate style of living. The emphasis being on the indigenous people.
There are five poems in the sequence Arriving at Moongalba. The first is called Ballads at Manifolds. I remember you, Kath. The quiet woman sat with Kate on a bench at Manifolds. Amanda Lynn's. Those Saturdays, the Wynnum River flats, a hawk circling, the ballads scored for guitar, violin, recorder, lagerphone. Oh, friends, still lit and live 60 years on. John full-throated, hailing the comrades in, workers, students, blacks. But it wasn't your scene. Just a few times I fronted your shy smile, your frank laughter. Slim woman in a pleated skirt. Surely Black Alice's jolly sneers snagged your pride. Being bossed to play, even friendly bossing, stirred a century's hurt. Your cause and your course clear, you were off through the weatherboard suburb to the bay and out to the islands, your people waiting there in want of words, you with the words to say.
We started with the civil rights movement. We had to appeal to the public to back us in that referendum for the repeal of the clauses of 52 and 126. These clauses didn't even consider us as human beings. I was a radical then, because I was caught between the extreme left wing and the extreme right wing of white politics. No one asked us, the Aboriginals, what we thought, so we had to make ourselves heard.
I spoke to Judith Rodriguez in Melbourne about her connection to Oojuru.
Her life was an extraordinary one because during the war she seized the opportunity, like many able Aborigines, to do more than just the domestic work the mission had taught. She worked for the army. In the end, she became a stenographer. She married and had two boys, and she was involved in a lot of Aboriginal activism. But in the end, she decided her own best role was to go back and gather up what she saw was disappearing so fast, and that was Noonuckle lore. So what she did was go back, recover her old name, which is Oojuru, which means paperbark, and tell stories that she'd heard in childhood. Place holds the people. They wander, making a life. Place is inside them, staking its claims, reserving its treasures. What place? Maybe the space by a mother between her bed and the wall, or the backyards of her childhood. It may be an endless plain with its secrets for living. For Oojuru, the green island in the sea's embrace, Mungeriba, miscalled Stradbroke, the grove Moongalba, miscalled Miora for the length of a colonial season. Mother, worker, activist, time remakes her, elder and teacher in the sitting down place, Moongalba. The claims of place, find me, recover the old ways. In the finding the gift, generations, voices longed for, paths of old retraced, surprising radiance of then new skies. The girl named for paperbark outlives the cities and honours, outlives anger. Her work, words that outlive even injustice. Oojuru gathers lore from the bush thickets, from the tellers of tales, from a childhood remembered. At the sitting down place, she rears tree trunks figured with carpet snake, her father's clan, builds a roundhouse, a shelter to welcome people. A place can be offered and received. Here in the roundhouse, the children sit, a ferry trip from home, and tourists wondering. The gift of place is set out, the food of life. Landscape the city supplanted. Laws of the land before streets. Greetings at the gathering of peoples. Her always simple words. Tell them of brown kids picked on. Tell them of confidence gone, of lives and language taken, of anger awakened. But more, to care for creatures of foot, fin and wing, cherish the bush that greens our wandering. Together, no matter the colour of the face, make of our meetings a special place. Moongalba.
Did Ujuru write much about themes of death?
Not that I'm really aware of. She wrote quite a bit about how things were going, how the law of her people was departing. The most famous poem, of course, is the title poem of We Are Going. But there were a lot of others, and there were poems of protest. The interesting thing is that while critics were saying that this was naive and uneducated poetry, in fact, it's formally perfect. She's got a better ear, a more perfect ear for rhythm and rhyme than many of my poor students have when they first encounter me. She chose simple forms. She didn't want to be artsy-fartsy. She was saying, people need to read this. This is something I'm actually trying to say to them. The fourth poem is called From the Other Side. I was brought up in Brisbane on the north side of the river, so Stradbroke was way across Moreton Bay. From the other side. The dead do not stay dead. There's your dad teaching kids still in the voice of Ujuru. For punishment, putting the kids on cut-and-dried mission rations. That's unsurprising news of the habit of white contempt. From the other side. On both sides of the bay, kids were empire bred, saluted and sang God save and marched into school. Foreigners, natives, suburban talk assured us they weren't much good, were placed on earth to be ruled by us, who knew nothing of you on the other side. But you, Ujuru, you refused to be nullified. You heard the put-downs, you saw what a sneer could do. You mourned what was going. You spoke of making new. You stood on your land with the law you lived as proof of title. You asked us across to sit side by side.
That's Judith Rodriguez reading poems inspired by the Aboriginal poet Ujuru Noonuccal, and this is Rhyming the Dead.
I have a tongue that whiplashes the present generation of the Australian white. It's a bit unfair, really, because we can't hold them responsible for what happened 200 years ago. But I'm fair to the extent that I say I won't hold you responsible for the past, but I will hold you responsible for the present and the future, because that is the white man's responsibility as well as mine.
It so happened that I was at Ujuru's funeral. I was at the Brisbane Writers Festival and my publishers at UQP took me there. The dark clearing. Here is the shady clearing of honour and farewell. Here the Noonuccal, neighbours and visitors off the ferry. Here the piling of branches, long home for her large life, hailed now a hero. Funeral games are on promise, the sorry pronouncements, the treaty, true amity, the intermingling. Here is the woman abased who spoke from a high place, found words against hate, who denying suspicion and separation, harboured laws for living. Curlew, cousin, have you called the three nights warning? Yet this is no death. Flowers are scattered, words uttered, the body passes. Poet and teacher, her place murmurs of her. In sea winds, the surf mounting the beaches, down to the dire rip of Jumping Pin. the leaf-thick paths, the shadowy glade, the glancing lights, the bark-shedding bush, are the smile of the girl named for the paper bark, who saw beyond the going to the growing back, to amity achieved. All is the people meeting at the roundhouse, at the sitting down place, Moongalba. Stradbroke was her place. Aboriginal tribes have been there, some of them for tens of thousands of years, just as some of us have family histories that lead us back to relatives in other places. And if you suddenly removed that, you'd remove a substantial part of your mind.
The birds and animals here, there is a communication that can be learned. I'm achieving this on Moongalba, that they want to communicate with me, and the communication is live and let live. They teach you so much, and there's a lot I have to learn from them.
Next time on Rhyming the Dead, the lives of two celebrated Australian poets cut short. Aidan Rolfe shares his response to John Forbes, a generation of 68 poet who spent his 47 years between Melbourne, Brisbane, Sydney, New Guinea and Malaya, observing his surroundings with humour and flair. And Fiona Britton takes us into the compelling world of Dorothy Porter, a feisty and energetic performer whose verse novels delved into the salacious realms of criminals, detectives and lustful lesbians. The music in this episode was produced by Marianne Lucataris, Edwin Montgomery and Mary Webb. Archival material was provided by the National Film and Sound Archive and filmmaker Frank Hymans. Thanks for being with me. I'm Maisie Cohen and this is Rhyming the Dead.